It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studio once again, John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
One more weekend that we don't have Maria because she's
recovering from tax day.
That's yep. right.
But she should be back next week, so we will look forward to that.
Yes, we will.
because we needed to bail us out, basically. Not to put too fine a point on it, but
no.
Yeah.
All right. Well, lots of little things to cover, and we're going to start out with some local issues. And boy, you couldn't get much more local than the trolley. Based on just where we're broadcasting from, we're down here at Trolley Central.
We are, in fact, the trolley will someday serve this very radio station, probably.
Right.
I don't know what else it'll serve. You have to get to or from going someplace. But, yeah, Greg Nichols unveiled his funding plan, finally, for the South Lake Union streetcar. And you may be wondering, how exactly at a time of fiscal crisis, when we have no idea how to pay for basic services in the city, are we going to afford a vanity project like the South Lake Union streetcar? Well, we're going to do it by taking away from new bus service. That's right, nearly $1 million that was scheduled to go into new bus service in the city of Seattle will be diverted instead to the Paul Allen vanity project of the Lakes South Lake Union streetcar. In addition to that, we have the prospect of naming rights for the different stations. I can just see corporations lining up for that one, can't you?
Vulcan Station.
And I love this one. Unsecured federal grants. Now, this is something that is sort of the bugaboo of transportation funding. We always have that federal money that's just around the corner, that's just coming in to bail out, whether it's the viaduct or 520 or whatever it is, you know, the I-5 repaving job that's going to need to happen sometime in the next few years. All of that money is conditioned on, you guessed it,
unsecured
federal grants. And incidentally, when we get to talking about the state legislature, let's put on the hopper for that also. That looks like the transportation plan is going down in flames again this year. It really is remarkable that they can't come up with money for any of this stuff, but give credit to Greg Nichols. He's trying to come up with the money for it, but he's coming up for the money for it again primarily by taking away from bus service that would be
Much needed in this city.
It is very much needed in the rest of this city.
I can't get a bus in here in the early morning hours to do my radio show. You know, I have to drive. Because there's no buses that come from where I live to downtown. So
yeah, and same for me. I mean, there's nothing that directly connects here at all from where I'm coming from. So there's very much a need for it. There's very much a need to get cars off the streets, and at the same time, you know, you're looking to increase the density of the creating an urban village around South Lake Union, and creating a transportation hub for people coming in to work. Supposedly, all these people will be coming in and work at the biotech centers in South Lake Union. You raise the question of how people are going to beginning downtown Seattle in the first place if the bus money is being cut out, unless they're taking buses from somewhere in the suburbs and getting direct buses into downtown that way. But the bus money is being cut down to begin with, so how are they going to drive downtown and then take the streetcar? I mean, it doesn't add up, basically, is what it comes down to.
All right. Hey, I should have started with, we started a couple weeks ago taking emails from listeners, and we're going to continue that today, but I also, and the email address for that is dj@kexp.org. If we have time at the end of the half hour, we will try and include some of those, throw those at Jav. But as people have pointed out, that's somewhat elitist, offering just the email access to get to those. So we also do have a phone number, but due to the fact that we don't have somebody that can go answer those on the day of, we'll have to then throw those at you the following week. So people should expect a little delay there. So the phone number to...
You've heard of 7-second tape delays.
This is 7 days.
More like a week, yeah.
So the phone number for the Public Affairs Line, which I check semi-regularly, is 520 206-308-5838. That's area code 206. And you can send us letters, too. You can always send us letters or leave your comments on the
You remember snail mail, don't you?
Yeah. In the good old days. I mean, so I still reach out and touch the IRS, as I did yesterday. The KXP address, 113 Dexter Avenue North, Seattle, 98109. And put it to my attention, Mike McCormick, and we will try and get those answered for you.
And what was that email?
Oh, the email again was DJ, as in disc jockey, at KEXP.org.
So, and we'll get to that by the end of the half hour, we hope.
We will certainly try.
Yeah.
Or your money fully refunded. All right, so moving along, Garfield, PTSA, is making a stand.
Yeah, they took a stand this week on military recruiters. Now, it's I think, largely a symbolic stand or largely a hopeless cause, but they came to the decision that they did not want military recruiters on campuses in Seattle area high schools. Now, this is something that has already been fought and litigated in other cities. Primarily Portland a few years ago tried to take that stand at the school board level and was come down on hard by the federal government. The I forget which bill it was actually that had this provision, but basically you cannot allow any recruiting for any kind of corporate job, career day type things at all on school unless you allow military recruiters on. And then of course, I think it was the Patriot Act that was one of these acts that allowed that required that schools give their student information to military recruiters.
I was thinking that was the No Child Left Behind.
No, you're right. It's No Child Left Behind.
If they wanted federal funding, they had to give out lists of all their kids.
Yeah. Now, there's quite a bit of opposition to that in the Seattle public schools, but nothing that has crystallized. But it might make a good campaign for activists, you know, PTSA groups at different high schools. But in any event, the Garfield group and they were very explicit in saying this is something that they wanted to send a message, and they hope would spread to other PTSAs at other high schools around the city, that particularly in time of war where they felt like recruiters were sending deceptive signals to the susceptible, you know, 17 and 18 year olds on the high school campuses, that this was not a healthy environment or not a healthy learning environment for students to be subjected to this kind of snake oil job on behalf of military recruiters in the schools.
All right. The Madison Market seems to be dishing out some.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting case. The Madison Market, an old Central Co-op up on 16th and Madison on Capitol Hill, is going through some turmoil right now. And you have to put this in context a little bit, because Central Co-op and PCC and these co-ops, because they are not worker run necessarily, but the workers have a large degree of input into the management of the operations, that there's always some sort of turmoil going on. It seems like Left Bank has been notorious for this over the years. This is the same kind of, you know, worker collective type management. But they've had several problems at Madison Market in recent months, and this is something coming to an head in terms of board involvement. And there's now a membership group that's trying to meet with the board and is meeting on its own to try and get some satisfaction to this. But there was an instance where a woman who was involved in the labor negotiating team for the workers there, they've been working without a labor contract since last August, was pulled over and drug tested a few months ago, which seems like something quite of an anomaly for a hippy dippy, you know, worker co-op type place. You'd almost expect that the drug test would be okay. Are you positive for drugs? Good.
You can go back to work.
Exactly. but no, they do have policies against obviously being, you know, drunk or high on the job. And the workers who are upset about this have seen it as a form of harassment of the woman who is involved in the labor negotiating. And then there have been a couple of very popular workers who've been fired, one for quote-unquote insubordination. The details are, of course, vary depending on who you're talking to. But they are in the middle of board elections right now. In fact, I think the nominations for elections just closed yesterday. So more to look for Madison Market, see how they resolve that. Now, one of the positives about that is that unlike, say, PCC or REI or one of these really enormous co-ops where they've been sort of corporate-controlled and corporate-owned or they're managed in that style, very much so, and that battle has been fought and lost for about the last 10 or 15 years. At a place like Madison Market, it's still small enough and some of the members are still involved enough where it can make a difference. So if you're, you know, if you're a member there and you care about this, you know, check it out and see what you can do.
All right. Well, let's see. The state level, let's move to there. The legislature has been...
It's been a bad year for the legislature. I mentioned...
transportation.
Before the transportation bill is, it looks like it's going to be dead in the water this year. A lot of the bipartisan rancor that has come up around the gay rights bill and more recently the stem cell bill, which I mentioned last week, went down in flames on Tuesday. Again, this the same two conservative Democrats, Sheldon and I'm forgetting his name from Hoquiam, the other guy. They crossed over to the Republican side of the aisle and shot down a bill that would have allowed embryonic stem cell research in the state of Washington, which is something of a blow to the biotech industry here in the state. Because it is modeled on the legislation in the state of California that would have undercut the federal ban on embryonic stem cell research by trying to encourage, you know, lines of research here in the state of Washington. That did not happen, but we got one other major thing coming up in the state of Washington on the budget, and that is the decision where in the tremendous shortfall on the budget, where the cuts are going to come. And healthcare cuts are very much on the horizon, and the question at this point is where those healthcare cuts are going to come from. And what it's looking like might happen right now is some tremendously destructive cuts in the Medicaid program. In particular, they're looking at imposing co-payments for prescription drug payments for Medicaid, which basically would be, you know, when you're talking Medicaid, you're talking very low-income people. You're talking people who are going to go without medications, and particularly when you're talking with people who have multiple prescriptions, who may take, you know, 10 or 15 different pills every day for all their different health problems. Once you start adding in co-payments of $3 each, and it doesn't sound like much, but once you start adding that in for every prescription, you're talking, you know, five prescriptions every week. That is something for somebody on a fixed income. And they're going to start going out with those prescriptions, and once again, you get into the same dynamic and the same cycle of people getting more ill, going to emergency rooms, or pharmacies being left holding the bag, and then not necessarily servicing Medicaid patients, which would be the other catastrophic outcome of that. So that's very much on the table, and needs people to be calling up their state legislatures and legislators and saying, you know, this is a bad idea. You know, do your best to protect the state basic health care plan. Do your best to protect the state health home care visits, which is another one that's on the table. And do your best to protect Medicaid because the people, in particularly in a scatty economy, and we saw the headlines in the papers again today about how the economy is turning down again. Wall Street's struggling and the economy is not doing well. Not the best time for low-income people to take it on the chin in terms of budget cutbacks.
I saw an article. I didn't get into too much detail on it, but talking about that Christine Gregoire, the person that currently resides in the governor's mansion,
pending lawsuits. Yeah,
it was mentioning some plan she had for Medicare, Medicaid, healthcare in this state. Did you catch any of that?
Yeah.
Is that coming from her, or is that
that's
just more of the same?
There's several different plans. One of them is from Gregoire, and that's the one where I hope I have this straight. I believe Gregoire's plan is the one that has the Medicaid cutbacks. There's also a plan in the state Senate that that's floating around that the Democrats there are putting forward, and then one in the House as well. So all of that has to be reconciled. It has to come out in the wash as to who will do it. But actually, now that I think about it, I don't believe that, because Gregoire's was the original proposal, and the Medicaid was not in the original proposal. I believe it's in the Senate proposal that's coming forward. And I see you're looking up on the web there now. So,
well, actually, no, I was looking at it because we just had an email come in.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to throw it at you now while it's still fresh.
Sure.
If I can get the darn screen close to where the microphone is, it's a trick. Why on earth would Geoff Parish call Garfield PTSA's stance on disallowing military recruiters on campus a hopeless cause? What a lousy, pessimistic thing to say. The NA recruitment movement campaign is picking up across the country. Recruiters are being physically kicked off high school and college campuses across the country, and it is working. The government is missing its recruiting goals by huge figures and is fighting back against this growing movement, evidence that is, in fact, does work. So please, Ja, be pessimistic if you want, but don't pour cold water on the independent grassroots movements that are absolutely crucial to achieving real change and progress.
Well, it's one thing to say counter-recruitment movements are valuable, and counter-recruitment movements are valuable, but to say that recruiters are not going to be allowed on campus as a matter of school district policy is something that is simply not going to happen. The school district is already short on federal funds. They're not going to risk losing federal grant money by kicking students off campus. That's simply not going to happen. But at the same time, it's incredibly valuable to challenge and to have counter-recruitment information and literature on the campuses and to challenge the lies that are put out there by the recruiters. Absolutely.
All right. Moving along. Protests. There was some local ones this week, and you're saying there's something coming up on the short term?
Yeah, something coming up very much this weekend, actually, nationally, in Washington, D.C., today and tomorrow at the World Bank and IMF. It's the annual spring meetings of the World Bank and IMF, and there's a march, I believe, this morning happening in Washington, D.C. But at the same time, there were some protests this week. There was tax day stuff going on yesterday, of course, and leafleting at various post offices around town. But on Wednesday, there were about 200 people, I think, that turned up.
I wasn't actually there, but one of the
Tukwila
papers said 100, but
yeah,
you can never believe that.
But the Harnish Group, the largest Caterpillar distributor in the Pacific Northwest, drew a fairly large contingent of protesters on Wednesday as part of an international day of protest of the sale of Caterpillar tractors to the Israeli army. And of course, that's used in knocking down Palestinian homes and burying Palestinians in their homes. And we've talked about that on this program before. But a very good turnout there, and part of what I believe will be an ongoing campaign. So look for protests against Caterpillar and the Harnish Group in the future. And thanks to all those who turned out on Wednesday. It was a good turnout.
Yeah, in fact, there's a good chance with the IMF World Bank protest that C-SPAN, often to their credit, actually they're a great resource, often carries things like that.
Yes,
so
they do.
Something for, again, those of us that are lucky enough to have the extra income to be able to afford things like cable. Well, John Bolton, outspoken would be putting it nicely, is...
Yeah, foot in, feet in mouth, big feet, small mouth. He is, of course, the person who's been nominated to become the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and that is before the Senate committee that decides on such things. And he took testimony this past week. We also heard testimony from a number of people who were disgruntled with Bolton's performance in Bush's first term as Undersecretary of State, or excuse me, of Defense. No, State. I'm sorry. He was in State Department. But a number of people who were concerned that as arms control czar, he was applying pressure to various CIA analysts who were not sufficiently hawkish in their analysis of the Cuban weapons program. And of course, Bolton was very hawkish on Iraq as well. Well, this is coming up for a vote this coming Tuesday, and unfortunately, it looks like Bolton, despite the opposition of all of the Democrats on board, the committee, at the committee level at least, it's 10-8 for the Republicans. And Lincoln Chafee, who's sort of the crossover moderate Republican, Republican from Rhode Island, has indicated that he is almost certainly going to vote for John Bolton. So that's going to go to the floor of the Senate, and almost certainly the committee is where it would have needed to be bottled up. You know, there's just too much of a Republican majority on the floor of the Senate for it not to go forward for Bolton to become the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and that's just a tremendous shame. It's somebody who's been intensely critical of the United Nations, very very hostile in his dealings with the diplomatic process in general. Suddenly becoming the United Nations chief diplomat to the world body, and you know, what can you say? It's a shame.
All right, and Tom DeLay continues to take heat.
Yeah, going down in flames. He came out with sort of an apology of sorts on Wednesday, but at the same time was very defiant and continued his attack on judges. And this is something that I think people need to pay attention to, because it's not just DeLay. This is part of the Republican blueprint to really try and really try and have one-party rule in this state, or in this country, rather, and really, really sort of challenge the judiciary as an independent arm of the government, and doing that both by dominating the appointment process and getting activist judges in there who will follow the Republican line, and also by trying to intimidate judges who are already on the bench. And this is something that the DeLay is being very intentional about, but I think it's really backfired on him. And in particular in the Terry Schiavo case, I think it just really, really, the public opinion is not with him on this, that they saw the judiciary as something that was really an important firewall against tampering by the federal government, and particularly tampering by Congress and the president. This is something where DeLay has said he wants to hold judges accountable, whatever that means. He almost went as far as threatening judges, it seems like. And this is something he's made himself into a household word, which is something Democrats have been trying to do with DeLay for a decade now. Is by trying to call attention to his ethical lapses and his morally corrupt fundraising and corporate ties and all the rest of this. They've never had much luck with that, but he's done their work for them. He's really made himself an unpopular guy, and I think his days as House Minority Leader are probably numbered.
All right, well, then that takes us to This Week in Iraq.
Not much to say this week in Iraq. people continue to die. Ministries continue to be filled. 85 insurgents were supposedly seized in Baghdad as part of a sweeping raid by the U.S. and Iraqi military on Tuesday and Wednesday. The same day on Tuesday, Jeffrey Akey, a contractor from Indiana, was kidnapped, an American. And then on Thursday, 14 people were killed in two Baghdad car bombs, and then four more people were killed yesterday in additional bombs in the southern city of Hilla. The violence level in Iraq has continued to rise. Despite the filling of government posts and the creation of the government, the attacks in particular this week came from Zarqawi's group, They have continued to rise, and no end seems to be in sight. But it's just really more of the same this week. Not much new to report there.
I saw on a related subject that there was actually two articles. One of them came out today, dealing with friendly fire incidents on, of course, friendly fire being on U.S. troops.
Yeah, and particularly the Pat Tillman incident, which wasn't Iraq, it was Afghanistan. But the Pentagon, of course, initially came out with a very different story about how Tillman died heroically, you know, charging up the hill. And it turns out it was friendly fire, and some explosion was set off, and the United States soldiers just reacted almost in a panic and just started shooting everything that moved, including in this case, an Afghani civilian and Pat Tillman. And, of course, Tillman, as a former football star and somebody who had been in the public spotlight, drew a lot of attention. His family continues to be very upset about the handling of the Pentagon's handling of this. The Pentagon went back and commissioned a report and is now refusing to release the details of that report. So there continues to be a question of what kind of accountability, or whether there will be any accountability with that particular incident, or with incidents of friendly fire in general, where the Pentagon just seems to be very loath to release details of those incidents, how it can happen or how it can be prevented in the future.
Right. Yesterday, there was an article in the PI that actually had been written in the New York Times that member of the Army, Jeff Coyne, who had been in Iraq, and the U.S. had dropped a 500-pound bomb on him and his unit, and they still can't seem to get
And Coyne had survived.
He survived.
But there were, I think, three soldiers who had died in that attack,
right,
and then five who had been wounded, including Coyne.
And they can't get the U.S. military to do a proper investigation to tell them what really happened there. So, just a couple minutes left. There, it brought a smile to my face this morning. There was an article in the Seattle Times entitled U.S. Eliminates Annual Terrorism Report.
Yeah, and apparently when the news gets bad, you just stop reporting the news. This is a question where the United States has been producing a terrorism report every year since 1985, saying where in the world terrorist incidents happen and how many of them happen and what the trends are. And the problem is that the Bush administration has been saying for years now that the war on terror is working, that terrorism incidents are getting fewer and fewer, and the problem is that their own report is contradicting this. Last year in 2004, there were more terrorism incidents than ever before by quite a margin. And so they stopped producing the report, and this was something that was just sort of quietly noted, I think it was a counterintelligence blog that actually first reported it. It wasn't even announced by the White House. It was just sort of quietly dropped. So they have stopped producing this report so as to not embarrass the White House.
Well, I think there also is some question as to the accuracy of the different incidents that make up the report. You know,
well, it's how you define terrorism,
right?
I mean,
exactly.
How can you define terrorism?
I mean, because if according to my recollection, which isn't always accurate on something like this, but I don't remember 2004 as being a banner year for terrorist attacks. I mean, I just don't remember. I remember, you know, a lot of the Code Orange and things like that being, you know, falsely elevated. But beyond that, I don't remember anything really happening here in the U.S. Do you?
Well, it's a global report. It's not happening here in the U.S. It's globally, and particularly in Iraq. You know, depending on how you define the attacks of the insurgency, a lot of those are, you know, roadside bombs, car bombs. Those are terrorist attacks.
All right. So,
they're part of an ongoing war. But it is very much part of the definition. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Talking once again with John Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And tell people where they can find Eat the State.
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks. It is a local journal of local, global, national news, events, humor. You can find it where you find free periodicals, bookstores, cafes, places like that. You can also find us on the web, current as well as past issues, at www.eattestate.org.
And, of course, you are always looking for more volunteers, more people.
Absolutely. We need help with distribution. We need help with sales. We need writers. We need researchers, all that good stuff. So email us, editorial@eatthestate.org, or info. Actually, info would be the better one, at eatthestate.org.